Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up the deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And welcome to downtown St. Louis, live from the Poker Room at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel. I am Paul Harris, sitting along Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. And once again, I have to say, welcome back to town.
Hey, I got back last night. I've had all of a few hours sleep like usual. Here we go again.
Yeah, you've been traveling around again, and you were in Vegas for the weekend, and you played in a big charity event. Tell me about that.
I did. It was over at the Hard Rock out there. It was for cerebral palsy. Unbelievable number of people that was out there and celebrities. There was only 10 tables, and I'm telling you, every table had five or six either pros or people you'd seen on the TV and movies and whatever. Jennifer Tilly ran it. She came out there, of course, with Phil Locke and the rest of them. We had everybody from Doyle to Antonio to Todd Bronson to you name it out there. And we raised $100,000 for cerebral palsy.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's one event, 100K.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, it was awesome. It really was. A gentleman, a friend of mine who unfortunately is afflicted with it, ran it out there. And the first time he's really done anything like this, and he ran it like a champ.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know a lot of pros are in town because the Doyle Brunson 5 Diamond Classic, which is a WPT event,
yep,
just got underway. And speaking of the WPT, our guest today is the host of the World Poker Tour, Mike Sexton, who we had a great time with this summer at the World Poker Tour just as the main event was getting underway. In fact, it was on 1D, day 1D, which was that controversial day where people got shut out and couldn't play. And Mike was there, and I saw him, and I asked him to come up to the suite where we were recording the show, and he was more than happy to do that. And
that's actually one of the times when we really screwed up.
Yes, we did.
Because we did the interview with Mike. We did our 15, 20 minutes, whatever
it was.
It was
like a half hour
on it.
Yeah.
And then we just sat there and talked.
We took the headphones off, turned off all the recording equipment.
Oh.
And we sat for another hour and talked because he didn't want to leave.
Exactly.
He was having such a great time.
We were picking his brain about things that have happened over the last 10 or 20 years, relationships we had with the people. It was absolutely awesome. And we get down, we look at each other and go, oops.
Why didn't he have the headphones on? But he promised because of that he would come back on the show. And since he was inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame just a few weeks ago during the November 9 final table,
correct,
he has been very, very busy. But today is the day that he will be back on with us. And Mike Sexton will join us in about 25 minutes. And we're really looking forward to having him back on the show.
Yep.
Speaking of TV poker, I saw your mug on the PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge this weekend.
Yep. The show is going phenomenally well. Daniel, of course, is being Daniel, which is great.
Yeah.
We've already renewed it for another year.
Every time I see it, I'm reminded of how great he is at doing that job.
Yes.
Of being the poker ambassador and coach and personality and all of those things that he is on that show. I really don't think you could find anybody who's better.
I absolutely agree with you. I couldn't name anybody that could do it any better than Daniel does it.
Yeah.
Because he's being Daniel. He's being himself.
Yep.
And what better fit?
Yep.
Let me be myself on TV.
Yep.
You know, and he does a great job of it. So I can't tell you exactly what will happen, although I know about who wins and who doesn't win and everything like that for it.
For the big finale, which is coming up, is it on Christmas weekend?
December 27th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right.
I can't do it, guys, but I'm telling you, it is fun. We had a blast.
Are there any celebrities as hot as the supermodel that was on there this weekend, Joanna Krupa?
You noticed her?
I think everybody did. That cop from Staten Island, New York, who was playing against her, I don't think he could get a word out of his mouth except drool.
Yeah, he doesn't remember a single hand, probably.
No. So. Both of the contestants on the Million Dollar Challenge this weekend did not get to the
correct
third level,
yeah,
and get to play against the against Daniel. But we're looking forward to the big finale that weekend. And Daniel was also involved in some more televised poker. As we mentioned last week, Poker After Dark is in the middle of a two-week run for their season finale for this year. And it's a cash game. And I like the cash games more than the sit-and-go tournament structure
that
they
have.
I do,
actually. Yeah, I do.
Because it's real poker that they're playing.
Correct. Yeah.
And there's real money on the table. And it's their own money, kind of like on high-stakes poker.
Yeah.
And produced by the same people. And you know, Maury and his crew do such a great job producing it. But how about that lineup of Daniel Negreanu, Patrick Antonius, Gus Hansen, Phil Ivey, Tom Dwan, and Phil Hellmuth? Which of these six is not like the other five?
Yeah. Yeah, have some fun with that one.
Well, obviously Phil Hellmuth, because he doesn't play a lot of cash games.
Yes,
and he actually seemed out of place and maybe even a little intimidated. Now, I know that Hellmuth's ego would never let him admit that. But I thought that that's the way he came off a little bit on TV.
Wow. Unfortunately, I was too tied up with some of the meetings I had in Vegas to see that. Did not see it, but I will watch it.
Well, then you missed out on these guys doing $100,000 flips. Four of them, or actually it was supposed to be four, and then Negreanu got in for the fifth.
Okay.
Each of them just put $100,000 in the pot.
Yep.
And it's showdown time. So the winner is going to make $400,000 off the other guys. Now, Patrick Antonius said he wanted to do it because it would help loosen up the game. Hellmuth refused to take part in it.
Yeah.
But he wanted the other guys to do it, and he was actually willing to put his $100 ante in, knowing he would lose that and his cards would be dead. Here, take my $100. I'm happy to have this because it's going to loosen up the game. And they do it, and Antonius wins the first one. And Ivy looks like he's steaming a little bit. You know, he's got that Phil Ivey gambler thing going on, and when he loses, even though it's only $100,000, which out of the Phil Ivey bankroll isn't that much, he looked a little bit upset.
See, this I love this show because it brings actually the personalities out.
Yes.
Phil Ivey hates to lose. If I was flipping coins, quarters, he would hate to lose. I'm telling you. That's just his personality. That's maybe why he is so successful, but he hates it.
And then he pushed them to do another one. I mean, literally 5 minutes later in the show, he wants them to do another one, and they do it. But this time Antonio says, no, I'm done.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
He's shaking 400K off the other guys, and no, it's kind of like a hit and run. Well, in this case, a sit and run.
Yeah.
But that one, Gus Hansen won. With like a jack eight or something and an eight flop, and he won that pot. And now things were very, very different at the table. And it's been very entertaining to watch because they've got props going on. They've got, you know, Dwan in full Durr mode, making moves on people, making those odd bets that he likes to.
Yep.
It's very entertaining. But I want to read to you something about Hellmuth that Daniel wrote on his blog last week.
Okay.
He talked about the lineup and the cash game. And he said, if you watch the shows this week, you'd know that I booked Phil Hellmuth's action in the game. And what that means, for those of you who don't know, is if Phil wins $100,000, Daniel has to pay him another $100,000. If Phil loses $100,000, he has to pay Daniel another $100,000. Regardless of who he loses or wins the money from, so that's what it is. Okay. He says, I have a lot of respect for the fact that Gus, Ivy, Durr, and Patrick play tons of hours of no-limit cash games on a regular basis, and that my game isn't quite good enough to compete with them unless I put in a lot of hours of my own. These episodes were filmed last year, and I hadn't played enough to feel like I could compete with these guys, but I thought it would be a great challenge. Hellmuth somehow felt that despite not playing cash games regularly against anyone, that he could just walk right into this game and be a favorite. I disagree and put my money where my mouth is by booking his action in the game. With the addition of the Hellmuth book, I went from feeling like minus EV to plus EV. Ivy, Durr, and Patrick just play at another level. In order to compete with them, you have to work very hard, play lots of hours, and study your weaknesses. I'm willing to admit that they are far better than I am at no-limit cash games, but I think Hellmuth actually believes that he is, quote, the best no-limit hold'em player in the world by far. Those are his words, not mine. He's either lying to the public when he makes those statements, or he genuinely believes that. Either way, he's completely delusional. That's Daniel Negreanu talking about Phil Hellmuth. And these guys are friends.
Yeah.
Now, for some perspective on this, I want to bring in the poker coach, Joe McGowan, who also has watched a lot of these high-stakes players play against each other. And I'm curious what your reaction is to what Hellmuth has been saying, Joe.
Hey, Dennis. Hey, Paul.
How's it going, Joe?
Good.
Well, this is fun stuff. What a way to start out for me today, talking about this one, huh?
Yeah.
You know,
Not to throw you under the bus at all, but.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I just have to agree with Daniel. I mean, Phil is a great, great player. You know, has a lot of bracelets, tons of experience, and he's a winning player. He's a long-term winning player. And, you know, I just think that Patrick and definitely Ivy and also Durr in that game, I just think that they're the favorite. And I also really believe that Phil Hellmuth might be a little bit out of his comfort zone. Boy, do they make that apparent on that show. I only caught bits and pieces of it. I've T-voted it. I'm sure I'll watch it like 8 times each episode. I really tend to study those and like to watch those. But they really made it a point to just pick him apart and kind of make fun of him and try to do the Johnny Lawton thinks of, you know, how much of a loser he's going to be at the end of the day, and they all laugh at him. And
yep.
You know, it's pretty good TV, I'll tell you that. It really is.
And, you know, it's a classic example of something that we've talked about a little bit in the past and we're going to have devote a whole show to sometime, which is game selection. And knowing who your opponents are and whether when you sit down at that table, I mean, if Daniel Negreanu is sitting down at a table and saying, look, I know I'm not going to be a winner in this game against these guys. If Daniel Negreanu has the brains to look at himself and say that, then we all need to say that every time we sit down at any table, right?
Absolutely. I agree with 100%. And Daniel is, that's, again, part of being Daniel. He can look at it, he can rationalize it, he can realize it. He also knows that he can play on their caliber if he would want to devote the time and go back to Bobby's room like he used to do a lot and everything on it.
Yep.
But right now he is, well, you call it rusty, you call it whatever. They're more up to date on everything. They're used to playing with each other. Yeah, he makes a very valid point.
There's also another element here, and I want to expand this into talking about some of these nosebleed stakes online games that have been played recently.
Oh, gosh,
yeah. Where, particularly for younger players, and by younger I mean under 30, in some cases under 25, we have guys who are playing for ridiculously large sums of money at levels and in amounts that make me think the money really doesn't mean anything to them. The chips to them are only a way of keeping score about who's better, and that making and losing millions doesn't really matter to their bottom line as it would to the average player who sits down. And, you know, if you're a 1-3 player and you book a $200 win, woohoo, that's a great day for you. Well, here are guys who are losing $2 million in a hand. Or in the case of this Isildur 1, this European player who came on and took the online world by storm a few weeks ago and has since gone broke, he lost $4 million in one session to this guy named nicknamed Stinger, Brian Hastings, just a couple of days ago. Millions of dollars. And he's 19 years old, supposedly. What do you make of all of this?
I mean, it's just, you're exactly right. I don't know if you can call it love of the game or inexperience, or I can think of a dozen different words you can throw out there on it, but they have no really concept of the money on it. To play like that level, do you know what your bankroll would have to be? You would have to be a Phil Ivey. You would have to. That's just ludicrous to play with those kind of stakes.
Yeah.
So it's definitely. I got to meet this guy sometime.
but it's not just him, because he's playing against Antonius and Ivy and Dwan and Zygmunt and Brian Townsend, and all of these guys are willing to play PLO 4 tables, 6 tables at a time for these nosebleed stakes. Joe, what's your take on it?
Well, I think, I actually watched some of that as they were playing, and a couple of things that really strike me. The one guy, how do you pronounce it, Paul? The guy that lost all the money?
Isildur 1.
Yeah. He... When I looked, and you know how you can look up the player and see how many tables are. At one point, I believe he was playing Ivy, 3 tables for huge amounts of money. You know, I mean, it was going from $1 million to $1.5 million to $500,000, 800,000 within 20 minutes on each table of the 3 that they were playing against each other. Okay, and that's all Ivy was playing, was those 3 games against him. But he was also then playing in the 25,000, heads up or whatever championship they had going on at the time. And he was also playing 4 tables against, Patrick, and he was playing 3 tables against Durr, and he was playing, like 9 tables at those stakes, I couldn't believe it, how he could really concentrate. I mean, he must be a pretty good player, although that was amazing to me. But then it also brings me to a lot of the older and more experienced and players that have been around for a long time and have made a lot of money gambling. You talk to those guys, they'll say, they've told me, Joe, there's guys that will come in, be winning players for years and years and years, come to Vegas or take a shot at something or do something and go broke in 3 days.
Yeah.
And, the other kid that did well that used to play 25-50 took a shot, I guess he, I believe, and I'm not sure on this stuff, but I believe he's the one that won like $4 million. So that maybe is a kind of good way to go, although maybe he's been winning for X amount of years at that level, took a shot, and boom, he won $4 million, so good for him. But, the other kid just, I don't know if he lost his mind or if he's a great player and ran bad or what, but if he did go broke, I don't know what his situation is.
You hear often from poker players that you need to know when to stop. If you're losing, you got to have kind of a stop-loss mentality. Here's, I'm buying in for, whatever it is, two or three buy-ins, and then if I lose all of that, I'm going to stop. There needs to be something on the top side as well where you say, okay, you know what, I'm going to hold on to this money for a little while. But for these guys, I think their competitive juices and their adrenaline gets pumping.
Well, that's just what I was thinking. It's the adrenaline rush. They're not even playing for the love of the game necessarily. They're playing for the rush, for the thrill and everything. When we talked to Slim, he talked about how many different times he went broke. And then when Doyle was younger, and he went broke. Willing to gamble every dime you have on something. I mean, that's scary.
That is scary.
That is scary. That's what these guys are doing.
Well, let me just tell you some numbers. At one point this year, Tom Dwan, Durr, was down over $6 million for the year. $5.5 million he lost in a single week to Issel Durr 1. Gus Hansen lost $5.4 million online this year. A guy whose screen name is Lars Luzak nearly destroyed his bankroll in a 500-1000 game and is in the process of working his way back up after losing $4 million this year. He's now grinding it up in much smaller PLO games than that. Phil Galfond has been missing from online play for a while because he got himself in the hole. Maybe these guys are just playing way too big and then finding themselves like a kid I know who moved out to Las Vegas at age 22. He was a pretty good 2-5 player. Yeah. He went out there and he did well 2-5. Then he started playing 5-10 and he started doing well at that. Then he moved up to the 10-20 game at Bellagio and he was doing okay at that. And then he sat down in the 25-50 game with friends like Joe's, with players like Joe's buddy Paul Taylor, who are big money guys at the Bellagio, who sit there and wait for a fish like that to sit down.
Yep.
And now he's back to the 1-2 game.
Yeah.
You got to learn a lesson there.
Yeah. There, I have a lot of friends and a lot of people that have moved to Vegas, and it's really interesting. In the beginning, and they're playing, the 25-50 game, which is kind of the bigger game at Bellagio that's not Bobby's Room that goes on a fairly regular basis. And even nowadays, that game doesn't go all the time. But they'll call me, for 6 months, Joe, this game's the easiest game in the world. This game's great, And they were that type of story. They were playing 2-5. They were playing 5-10. They took a shot. They go there. They run good for a while, and it's the easiest thing in the world. Almost all of those guys, except for my friend Paul Taylor, all of those guys have, gone broke, gone home broke, and now do something totally, totally different. So you really do want to be careful with the game selection, and you have to understand that sometimes the cards make you look great, and sometimes you run, really well for a while, and sometimes you have stretches of 6 months, a year. Some people could actually run poorly in the luck fluctuation for, 10 years. And it can just happen, and you can just eke along and kind of break even for a while. So, I do think that game selection is huge, but it is interesting, for a lot of the players, for the huge, huge stakes players, talking about the bankroll, and that's where I think people like Phil Ivey and other people that have a really good income, a lot of people know with his affiliation with Full Tilt, he's going to, I would imagine, get a lot of money from Full Tilt. So it just makes it a little bit easier that you have that steady income, and it's not just poker. The guys that are just poker and kind of risking and playing their poker bankroll, that's where it's real dangerous, because once you lose, you really can't rebuild other than from poker. And how are you going to do that if you can't play the big game anymore? A lot tougher.
Absolutely right. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And our podcast available on thechipleader.com. We had a record number of downloads of the podcast last week because of our interview with Darvin Moon. And part of that interview that went viral on the Internet, which we will talk about when we come back in just a moment. And still to come this hour, Mike Sexton, the host of the World Poker Tour and the newest member of the Poker Hall of Fame. This portion of our show is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars.net, that's where you need to go, because you can get in the free rolls and you can get down to the event, the 7th annual PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. This is monstrous, guys. I just got a kind of an update from them, and they sent it to me. They've got over 800 people already qualified for the main event. This is the one that last year they had almost 1,400 in with a prize pool of over $12 million.
And you still got 3 weeks to go.
And you got 3 weeks to go. This thing's going to be monstrous. I don't know how many they're going to get down there, but it's huge. This is the biggest thing that PokerStars puts on. It's over 50 events in those 10 days down there. Buy-ins range anywhere from $200,000 to $25,000. There's nightly $200 buy-ins if you get knocked out one of the other ones. There's 10 events down there at $500. It just goes on and on and on. And I'm telling you what, they set this thing up. If you've never been to the Atlantis in the Bahamas, you need to go. It runs from January. January. It starts with a J. Hey, I was close.
Yeah.
from January 4th to the 14th down there, there's about 12 days of events going on it. Everything you could possibly imagine. Go to PokerStars.net, get in on these free rolls. You can have a free trip to the Bahamas, to the Atlantis, for a chance to win several $1 million. Other than that, it's not exciting.
PokerStars.net, one of the sponsors of the Final Table. We'll be right back here from the Lumiere Casino Hotel in downtown St. Louis.
It's a winter wonderland at Lumiere Place this December 1st through the 24th. And while the winds may be howling outside, things are heating up with $125,000 in instant cash and prizes inside. It's as easy as playing the games you love, including exciting new slots and the city's best table games. Earn 100 points each day and win an instant prize. Limit one per player per day. Start playing December 1st at 8 a.m. and play every day through December 24th at 11:59 p.m. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
This portion of the show brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the group that fights for poker players like you and me, whether you play in casinos like Lumiere Place or online at PokerStars.net or in a home game or anywhere else, maybe charity events, wherever they are. Poker is under attack in some venues in this country, and the Poker Players Alliance fights back on your behalf and mine. They do it because of members like you. You can join up for just $20 for a premium membership at theppa.org. That's theppa.org. You'll get updates on all the legislative efforts, the push through the Barney Frank bill, which hopefully we can get passed in 2009 in the House and get a similar one going in the Senate. You'll also find out about the fights that they're doing on a regular basis in courthouses around this country with poker players busted in their homes just for playing the game we love. The Poker Players Alliance, fighting for all of us. Go to that website and find out more information, theppa.org. All right, Mike Sexton just minutes away. First, we have to go back to last week's Final Table show when we had Darvin Moon on the show, the logger from Western Maryland who came in second at the main event of the World Series of Poker. And in the conversation, you asked him about mistakes that he made, and I joked that I thought the biggest mistake he made, or if it had been me, the biggest mistake I would have made was lying to my wife about the cards he held in a hand against Stephen Begleiter, where he laid down king-queen, which we all saw on ESPN, but he went over and told his wife that he had pocket queens.
Right.
And I joked that, you know, there's a mistake right there. Here's what Darvin said last week on the show.
No, that wasn't a mistake. Because I felt that the people backstage was listening on those mics and then sending stuff out to the coaches. So that was done intentionally.
That's what he said last week, that he thought people backstage were listening. Now, when I heard that, I thought to myself, does Dennis think that the ESPN crew is helping other players cheat? And I was going to ask him about that, but you kind of waved me off on the air because we were, you know, it's our first time having Darvin on the show. We didn't really want to go after him. But afterwards, this thing went viral online. People who downloaded our podcast or listened to the radio show posted that part on various forums, and people started commenting on it all over the place. And that's why we had a record number of downloads last week, and Darvin became kind of an online star yet again.
Yep.
Now, here's the interesting thing to me, and I didn't think of this until a listener emailed me.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN's not the only one listening backstage.
Correct. Correct.
And by the way, the ESPN people, they can see his hole cards. So whether he says he has queens or he says he has deuce nine, doesn't matter. They can see that he had king queen.
Correct.
There's no secret there for the ESPN people. However, Bluff Magazine was doing a live online broadcast with various members of the Ultimate Bet team, including Phil Hellmuth and Joe Seebach and our friend Annie Duke and others.
Right.
They were doing this throughout the entire final table. And they were talking about what was going on. And I was listening to that online on that Saturday night and on Monday night as well when he went heads up with Joe Cada. And you could hear what the guys were saying on their microphones in the background of the Bluff broadcast.
Correct.
So when he talks about the people backstage listening in and worrying about passing the word along to their coaches, you've got to keep it in context and remember that Phil Hellmuth was Jeff Shulman's coach.
I know. What a lot of people don't realize is backstage there, and it's not that large of an area. There's the little green room where you're at, and right across the hall from it is where all this production was going on and where this stuff was on it. You could stand at the door and hear some of the conversation going on the mics there.
So it was not secure in any way.
It was not.
It was not just the ESPN truck that was listening to what was coming off these guys' mics.
Yeah. I mean, we would joke about it. You have to be careful. You know, you make sure you turn your mic off during the breaks and everything like that. Literally, you wanted to turn your mics off during the breaks because you didn't know who could be hearing your conversation with your coach or whoever.
So, for instance, last year when you were at the final table
Absolutely.
And you would go over and talk to Joe McGowan, you would have to reach down and turn off your little remote
Correct.
Microphone thing so that people couldn't hear you.
And I didn't have to worry about it because, Joe, the first thing when I come walking over there, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off. So it wasn't any problem that way.
Well, let me ask Joe, do you think Darvin was right to be paranoid about that at the final table?
I think so, in a way, only because, you know, quite frankly, because of his inexperience. I remember, you know, when I was kind of getting going with poker and I played one of my first tournaments and I was lucky to make the final table. It was at Caesars. I think it was called the Las Vegas Open or something like that. And Chris Ferguson was in the tournament and some of the bigger names. It was only a $1,000 buy-in. I ended up making the final table, sitting down. My wife was there and a friend and his wife. During the first break, my friend says to me, hey, the TV behind you, you know, they can see your cards. Every time you look it down at your hold cards with the camera, you know, it's exposing your cards to everybody. And I'm like, what? You know, and he, of course, laughed at me, and I fell for it. I mean, I was just that gullible because I was kind of new. Now, whether he's gullible or over-paranoid, I mean, I can just see it of why he might possibly think that. I mean, these guys were playing for first and second place is how much, you know? $15 million or whatever the heck it is. It's an unbelievable amount of money. So I don't think he's really completely out of line just being paranoid. I'm sure he probably maybe wishes he didn't say that, depending upon how you would think, you know, of what he meant, if he's accusing ESPN or somebody. But I can just see
not.
It. That's all I'm trying to say. I don't think any of that would happen, and I really mean that. But I can just see him being a little paranoid from inexperience.
In retrospect, I don't think he was talking about ESPN.
Exactly. I do not. And believe me, I do not question ESPN whatsoever.
Right.
Period.
Right.
But I can see an issue out there literally walking by the door and hearing something.
Yeah. And when one of the other players' coaches is sitting there listening to that backstage, I would be concerned about that as well.
Yeah.
It's a completely valid concern. All right, Mike Sexton is standing by. We're going to get to him in just a moment here. This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watch. Dennis has that Reactor Watch on his wrist now, and I'm guessing that this weekend in Vegas, more people were asking you about it.
Absolutely. I sat down at a couple of cash games, and, of course, the watch got taken off and handed around to everybody. I'm wearing the one with the nice cardinal red on the background of it, and that it's an awesome one. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't say this if I couldn't back it up. You can compare this watch to any watch on the market, regardless of price. They are built to either meet or in many cases exceed what the Swiss standards are on this thing. This watch is unbelievable. It's the durability of it that's just unbelievable. And then you look at it. They have over 90 models to choose from. If you can't find a watch there that you like, that isn't it fits your wrist and fits your style of play and everything like that, I don't know where you can go to do it. And this is a lifetime watch. You will never destroy this watch.
For more information, go to the sponsors link on thechipleader.com, Dennis's website, and look for Reactor Watch. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 the Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to downtown St. Louis. Paul Harris with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. Next week on the show, James McManus, who's written a great history of poker called Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker. He'll join us next week. And in 2 weeks, Vanessa Russo returns to the show, fresh off her appearance on The Bank of Hollywood on E!, a brand new show that debuted last week, and appearing in Hustler magazine.
Okay. Fully clothed.
Fully clothed. We'll talk to Vanessa about that in 2 weeks. But today, also fully clothed, we're happy to welcome Mike Sexton back to the show. He, of course, is the host of the World Poker Tour and the newest member of the Poker Hall of Fame. Mike, welcome back to the Final Table.
Hey, guys.
We're doing great. Nice to talk to you.
Congratulations, Mike. It's well-deserved, no doubt about it.
I appreciate it, Dennis. Thank you.
You know, when we were talking about who would go into the Poker Hall of Fame this year and running down all the people who were nominated, well, Dennis and I agreed 100% that as the ambassador of poker, you absolutely deserve to be there. Now I wonder, is there a bust of you? Is there a real Poker Hall of Fame somewhere? What do you get for getting into the Hall of Fame?
Well, hey, that's the question. You get, now, it's to be in Binion's Horseshoe downtown. All the fame guys that put on the wall will get stole all the time, and so they took it down from there. And I understand that Rio, the World Series, or somebody is negotiating as to where it can have a home where people can actually go in and visit it, like a little museum where you can see the guys that are in the Poker Hall of Fame. And you know, obviously that'll be a good thing when that happens. But you know, it was a great honor, and you know, it's to me, it's the ultimate career achievement award. And you know, when you've been in poker all your life like I have, it's nice to know that even when you're gone, you know, you're going to be up there with the true legends of the game, you know, like Doyle Brunson and Stu Unger and Puggy Pearson and Johnny Moss and these kind of characters, and it's pretty cool.
Well, when we were trying to decide the listing down there, it was pretty much, okay, Mike, yeah, he's in. Next. Now, is anybody else qualified on the list? That's pretty much the way we went down. And I'm telling you, I didn't talk to a single person that didn't think you should have been number one of that list and definitely should be in the Hall of Fame. So congratulations, like I said. And someday I would love to be able to even be considered for it. And I am so far away from it, it's ridiculous. You're there for what you've done, and it's just been awesome. You started at 12 years old playing poker? Somebody told me that. That can't be true.
Is that true that you started playing poker when you were 12 years old?
Yeah, I started playing when I was about 12. Yeah, that is true. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, a lot of people feel should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago, probably. Danny Robinson, if he's considered the best seven-card set player, used to be Chip Reese's partner. They went out to Ohio, from Ohio, I mean, to Las Vegas in the early 70s and won $1 million back then, the first summer they were out there. And it really took the town by storm and became Las Vegas legends. And you know, little did I know when this guy was teaching me how to play and keep me broke all those times when I was in school that, you know, how good he was. But once I got away from him and got around the average guys, and it was then I realized that I had an aptitude for cards that most guys didn't have. And you know, it didn't matter, like when I went to college in the dorm, whether playing hearts or euchre or poker or whatever the game might have been, you know, I could see that I was better than everybody else at it. So it's ended up working out well for me.
Mike, where did you first start rounding, going to poker games all over the place and kind of running over the table? Where did you play?
I played in North Carolina, actually. You know, I joined the Army when I got out of college. Got stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina in the 82nd Airborne Division. And turns out when I got out, I was teaching some ballroom dancing part-time, and I met a guy who was a very wealthy guy that was starting a new company and wanted me go to work for him. It was a military sales company, and so I did that for about 3 years. But while I was doing that, you know, I got married and just started finding some home poker games to play in North Carolina. So I started playing these a week, and I was doing well in them. And pretty soon, I could find that, you know, you could get invited to these games about every night. There was a game somewhere, and I soon discovered I was making money playing poker than I was making on the job. And after I got divorced, after about 3.5 years, I said, you know, I'm just going to quit this job and play poker because I really love to play the game. I mean, I truly, truly enjoyed playing. Never got tired of playing back then. And I said, you know, if I get broke, I can always go back and get another job. And it was over 20 years before I got another paycheck, and that was a writer's check from Card Player. So that gave you about lunch at McDonald's. That was about it, you know. But
And what were you playing in those days, Mike? Was it all stud?
No, actually, played a lot of dealer's choice. We had a rule back there in most of the games. If you could explain it, you could deal it. And I always loved that, you know. And we played wild cards, crisscross, burn a card, replace a card, you know, every possible game that you can think of. And, you know, but a lot of high-low split games. And you know, Hold'em wasn't even going back in those days, you know, basically. But you know, I always loved that rule. If you could explain it, you could deal it. And that's what we did. So it was fun.
Well, I always think every game has what they call card sense. And if you know how to play almost any game and play it well, you can carry over to most of the others once you understand the rules. I can still imagine, though, if you can explain it, those first couple of hands that you played were kind of like, now, wait a minute. Let me understand. I can actually throw one card away and get one back, or I can...
Yeah, low spade and the hole splits with what? Wait a minute. Yeah. Explain that again.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of stuff that went on. And, you know, I just had an aptitude to be able to catch on to those kind of games quicker than most. So it's good for me. I believe it's good for all good poker players to play a variety of games. And why these guys become professionals and just specialize in limit hold'em or no limit hold'em or something, they miss out on the boat in terms of, you know, earning possibilities. And you know, sometimes the guy in the suit and tie will come in and sit down. He might be playing seven-card stud. Sometimes he might be playing no limit hold'em. And I think if you're a pro player or even just a good amateur player that wants to make money playing poker, you know, you need to diversify yourself and play the other games.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And in case anybody thinks that Mike is solely involved in promotional and broadcasting sides of poker, uh-uh. He was out there this last year, played in the main event, cashed in the main event again. I remember talking to you, I think it was on about day six or something like that, comparing chip stacks and the whole bit.
The 45th time Mike has cashed, according to my numbers. Is that right, Mike?
I think it's 45 or 47 or something, and you know, it just shows I've been around a long time, that's all. But it's pretty good, and I'm proud of that. I used to be in the top three or five, you know, but the last 4 or 5 years I really haven't had a chance to play a number of events like all the guys. You know, a lot of guys that have a lot of cash, they're out there playing every single day, and you know, I just don't do that anymore. But I still do enjoy playing and play when I can, and, you know, I think it's great. You know, I think I told Dennis, I'm not sure if I told you, but when I cashed in the main event this year, it was the seventh time that I cashed, and it tied me for second place with Doyle Brunson and Phil Helmuth. Now, you know, Doyle's played 20-some more of those championship events than I have, but, of course, the first 7 or 8 years, it was winner-take-all, so you had to win at the cash. You know, I didn't start playing until 1992, and I think I missed three times in the 90s somewhere along the way. So, you know, I've done pretty good for the amount of times I've played, I think, in that tournament anyway.
I think you've done very well.
Good tennis.
We're talking with Mike Sexton here at the Lumiere Plays Final Table. He, of course, the host of the World Poker Tour and the newest member of the Poker Hall of Fame and a bracelet winner back in 1989 in seven stud split. We were talking earlier in the show, Mike, about these young players who are now online, and you know a lot about online poker, which we'll get to in a moment. But they're playing for these nosebleed stakes, 200, 400, 400, 800, 500, 1,000 PLO. What do you think of that trend and all these guys who are putting millions of dollars on the line in these pots?
Well, you know, it's pretty incredible. I mean, honestly, my biggest fear about that is that some big-time loser is going to claim he was cheated, and then that's going to set out all the anti-gamblers shut down online poker or not get it passed, legalized. And you know, really, it concerns me that a few people, you know, might possibly destroy, you know, the enjoyment of poker for millions of players that like to play $20 buy-in tournaments and stuff. And, you know, so I'm a little fearful about that. you know, I'm a gambler at heart myself, so I understand you always want to play a little bit higher and press it to the limit and test yourself against the best competitions. But honestly, I think it's gotten a little bit out of hand, and I think obviously we know somebody's going to bleed pretty bad and get hurt, you know, playing those kind of stakes. But, you know, guys have those choices, and they can do what they want to, but, you know, it's pretty good, I'll say that.
Is it possible to have a bankroll that can sustain it?
Well, there's no way everybody in the game can sustain it, you know.
Exactly.
I think, really, to play the kind of stakes that they're playing, honestly, you got to have $50 million, $100 million bankroll to play those games where you can sit down and lose $1 million, $2 million, $4 million in a week that these guys are losing. I mean, you know, I don't think any of them have that kind of bankroll, no.
Yeah, it's amazing, these levels, and I do. With the positive stuff that's come out of Washington in the last few weeks, I would hate for it to be destroyed by some story picked up and then, you know, the opposition blow it out of proportion and everything. And all it would take is one person, you know, making an off-the-cuff remark or whatever, or actually, you know, just, you know, being upset because he did lose and all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we all make comments like that occasionally.
Now, Mike, you've been involved in online poker for years. Of course, you're a spokesperson for Party Poker, and you got in on the online boom very, very early. You were very smart to become a part of that and become involved with an online poker. Where do you think we are now when it comes to the chances of 2010 being the year that we get government off the backs of poker players completely?
Well, hopefully it'll do that. I'm not sure that early, but it's definitely going to happen. You can put it down in stone. It's just fun.
We're losing him. I think Mike here, and get him into a better cell. I'm interested in this because of his involvement with Party Poker for all these years.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's a guy who's been involved in poker at all the different levels and was right there, you know, when the WPT came out, when Steve Lipscomb invented the WPT based on Henry Orenstein's hole card cams. Mike was the guy who was called to be the host of the World Poker Tour, and they put Vince Van Patten next to him.
And then away you go.
And that was really when online poker really started, not online poker, but TV poker started exploding. And so Mike has really been at the forefront of so much of this game through all these years.
Well, and he's worked heavily with the PPA, too, on the changes here. I know, and I really was going to ask him about this, but I know that he was involved in a case in South Carolina that was brought in front of one of the judges there. And he went together and put a documentation from the WPT, from previous hands of it, showing how it was skill and not luck that did this. Here's hand A, here's hand B. Hand B wins, even though it's less, because player does this.
Right.
Know, boom, boom, boom. Got done with it, presented it. I did the whole thing on a video and showed it to the courtroom and showed it to the judge. The judge looked at it and said, I am convinced.
Yep.
There is no doubt this is a game of skill, end of case.
Yep.
On it.
Absolutely.
And Mike was the one that put that all together, and he showed, and I wish he was here. I think the figures are something like 70% of the hands are won by a weaker one. So if you play 100 hands, 70% of the time, the hand that would have won it if you just played a showdown doesn't win the pot.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reason for that, guys.
And the reason that you can win with that weaker hand is because you're a better poker player.
There you go.
That's where the skill of the game comes in.
Correct.
And it's not just a matter of somebody who gets lucky and hits their two-outer or three-outer
four-outer. There's always going to be an element of luck in it, but there's so much skill involved, and Mike was able to help prove that with it. So, yeah, absolutely, you know. Not, I'm going to deny it. There's luck in golf. There's luck in basketball, everything like that.
Absolutely. All right, Mike is back on the phone. Sorry we lost you on a bad cell there, Mike. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you guys. Sorry, I got cut out there.
That's okay. So you were talking about the possibility of 2010 being a big year for online poker.
Well, obviously we're all hoping that happens. I think it's inevitable that it's going to happen sometime. Whether it's 2010 or 11 or 12, I don't know, but it's coming for sure. And it may come as a state-by-state basis where California's considering having online gaming just against people who live in California. You know, that there's a model out there now around the world. Italy is doing that, where you can play online poker against Italians. France is legislating the same thing, where they can play online poker against people in France. You know, they're going to regulate it, they're going to tax it, and they're going to make money from it. And that's what we should be doing here. It's just silly that millions of people like to play. They would love to have their games regulated, where the sites are honorable, where everybody's going to get paid off, and they don't have anything to worry about about being illegal, so to speak. And I think that obviously we should head that direction, and that's what should happen. And it's just too much money that the states and the federal government is going to miss out on, you know, when people are doing it anyway. It's silly not to, to legalize it and regulate it.
I agree with you 100%. There was an article in the L.A. Times here a couple of days ago about California and what may happen out there through their legislation. I would hate to have to go through state after state after state setting this all up, because then, well, I don't think that's going to happen. If they break the groundwork and California or whatever state comes through and does legalize it and does start getting the revenue, which definitely California could use, then I think it will help it in Washington, and these guys kind of open their eyes. What other company says, please come in and regulate us, please make sure that everything's okay, please tax us?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's ludicrous that they're still fighting it so hard against it, some of the people.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Mike has been involved in party poker for a long time, which is a huge site in Europe. And is party poker expanding, and do you see online poker moving into all sorts of different markets in Asia and Africa and other places in the world?
Well, definitely. They're hoping to expand the brand worldwide, and you know, they recently purchased the World Poker Tour, where they're going to be able to put on more international events of the World Poker Tour's brand combined with the Party Poker brand, and it's going to be pretty strong out there around the world. Obviously, they're looking to get a foothold back in the U.S., if at all possible, when we legalize and regulate that. So, you know, they're positioning themselves, you know, not just around the world, but hopefully back in the States as well. And, you know, we're all looking forward to that day happening. And I think the article that Dennis was talking about the other day in the L.A. Times had mentioned that in California alone, they could make $500 million a year from online poker if they taxed it and regulated it. And you know, that's a lot of money. I think the Indian casinos out here now, they're paying big, the state only pay like $250 million a year to them. So we're talking about twice as much money they're getting now from these Indian casinos out here. And you know, I think they're going to step back and smell the coffee and they're going to have to go for that, I think.
Well, I think so, too. All right. Well, one quick thing, Mike. I mean, what's new with you? I know you've had your book, The Shuffle Up and Deal. I know you've been involved with WPT Season 9 coming up, I think. I assume you're going to be on that. What's happening with Mike Sexton over the next 6 months or a year?
Well, we're filming, and you know, as you know, we're in the middle of Season 8 on the World Poker Tour now. And, you know, obviously, hope we'll see what happens next year and the year after, but I think it's going to be in good hands, and we're going to do well with it. But we'll see what happens there. Obviously, everybody's taking a step back to see what happens with online poker. I know this. If it gets legalized and regulated, we're going to have a poker explosion like we experienced about 4 or 5 years ago.
I agree with you.
And it may be bigger than that even. You know, once people are comfortable, they're not – it's easy access to get their money into their accounts. They don't have to worry about doing anything illegal, and they can pay where they're regulated, and they're going to get paid off. I think we're going to see another poker explosion once again, and obviously when that happens, where you have legalized online poker sites that can qualify players for every televised poker tournament, I mean, you're going to see numbers that all the casinos that host World Poker Tour events or World Series events, however many seats they have in that venue or how many you're going to be able to fill. Because with the online qualifiers, you're going to be able to fill 1,000 seats from guys that qualified by playing a $100 tournament, for example. And you know, this is going to be a great opportunity for people nationwide who could never travel to Las Vegas or some of these places where they have these $10,000 buy-in tournaments to play because, you know, they have families, they have jobs, they don't have $10,000 to put in a tournament, but obviously they can pay $50 or $100 or take a shot at an online satellite to get in these tournaments. And I think you're going to be seeing a lot of that if and when online poker is legalized.
Mike, the last time we saw you was day 1D of the main event this year. Last time we had you on the show, I mean, when there was the big controversy about people who wanted to play in the main event getting shut out because day 1D was completely sold out. And we dedicated a whole show to that with your help, and we appreciated that very much. But since then, Jeffrey Pollack, the then-beleaguered commissioner of the World Series of Poker, has stepped aside, and the Harrah's organization hasn't mentioned a word about who might be considered for that job. So I'm going to ask you point blank here. Mike Sexton, do you want to be the commissioner of the World Series of Poker?
Well, it's flattering when I hear those things, but I'll be unable to take that position. Obviously, I'm affiliated with the World Poker Tour, and so I wouldn't be able to have the time or the effort to do it. But, you know, I don't even know that they're going to fill that position again, from what I understand. But, you know, I do think that there needs to be somebody to interact with the players and Harris and the Rio and the casino and all that. And, you know, certainly what they've done with the World Series and what Jeffrey Pollack did, you can't do anything but salute this guy for the growth of the World Series of Poker and, you know, how prominent they've made it, for the ESPN televised deals that they've got. You know, it has put it prime time. And, you know, everybody obviously knows about the World Series of Poker, and I'm talking about the average guy on the street that doesn't even play poker. So once you've got that brand out there, you know, like they have with that, then you got to take a step back and say, boy, they're doing something right there. So, you know, that's a good thing for poker, I think, and it's good for all of us, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Ironically, I just got a call from Jeffrey Pollack the other day, and I'm going to meet him for dinner next week, and so we'll see what he's up to.
Plus, if you're the commissioner, you can't go for your next bracelet and your 46th cash.
You know. No, I'll be introducing guys like Dennis. Dennis, congratulations on getting the bracelet here. That's what I'll be saying. Say so.
I would love to hear those words come out of your mouth, let me tell you. No doubt about it. I wanted to touch on one other thing real quick. This summer, I was able to get involved a little bit, and you started the Poker Gives. I was wondering how that's developed and what's happened with it in the last few months, too. Has it taken off the way you wanted it to?
Well, it is. You know, we're getting pretty excited about it. We really haven't had the time to put in it like we wanted to, but now we've hired somebody to do the administrative stuff for us that'll get us going. We're actually going to have a big month next September. It's going to be called the National Poker Month for PokerGives.org, and we're hoping all the casinos across the country are going to hold charity events for PokerGives.org. We're hoping all the online sites hold them, or we can have a tournament virtually every day of the month next September and raise money for PokerGives.org. It's an opportunity for poker to give back, we feel like, and it's a united effort on the poker community's part. We're hoping casinos join in, the players join in, and, you know, if that happens, I truly believe that the poker industry can raise millions of dollars for worthwhile charities like the Paralyzed Veterans of America, like Special Olympics, like Intrepid Forward Heroes Funds, and these kind of things that virtually everybody, you know, should be touched by, in my opinion. I mean, these are people that made the ultimate sacrifice for us, and certainly us holding some poker tournaments and giving them a little bit of money is the least we can do for what they've done for us. So, you know, we're hopeful that the poker community unites behind this effort, and next September we're hoping to be a real, real big month.
Well, make sure you get me involved in that some, Mike. I'm not for sure what I can do. I'm just, like you know, there's a ton of things going on, but I guarantee I will help you in some way with this in September on it. Guys, this was Mike Sexton. It's my honor to have him on the show here, a recent Hall of Famer. Mike, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us for a while.
It's always a pleasure, Mike.
Dennis, it's my pleasure. I appreciate it, guys, and I just love to chat poker with you guys anytime.
Thank you so much, Mike, and we will definitely talk to you soon. Hope you have a great holiday season.
Okay, you got it. Thank you.
Poker Hall of Famer Mike Sexton here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
It's a winter wonderland at Lumiere Place this December 1st through the 24th. And while the winds may be howling outside, things are heating up with $125,000 in instant cash and prizes inside. It's as easy as playing the games you love, including exciting new slots and the city's best table games. Earn 100 points each day and win an instant prize. Limit one per player per day. Start playing December 1st at 8 a.m. and play every day through December 24th at 11:59 p.m. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips. Next week on the Lumiere Place Final Table, James McManus, a guy who wrote a terrific poker book several years ago called Positively Fifth Street, in which he took the money that he was paid to do a newspaper article, entered the main event with that money, and ended up at the final table. That was a great book. Now he's got a new one called Cowboys Full, The Story of Poker. We'll talk to him next week. And in 2 weeks, Vanessa Russo, who you've seen on the PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge, and you've seen on the new E-Show, Bank of Hollywood, and maybe in the recent episode, issue of Hustler Magazine, or earlier this year in her swimsuit in Sports Illustrated. She'll be with us in 2 weeks. Until then, download our podcast on thechipleader.com, and thanks for listening to the Lumiere Place Final Table.